Okay. All right, who would like to go first? All right, Rich, come on up.
Good evening. Sorry for my weakened voice. I'm recovering from 3 months of double pneumonia. But it was too important not to be here.
Glad you're feeling better.
I'm sorry?
Glad you're feeling better.
So far, so good. I'm Rich Barrasso with SARGE, Sussex Alliance for Responsible Growth. We are an allied member of the Sussex Preservation Coalition, also known as SPC. SPC is a nonprofit organization of nearly 20 allied organizations and about 5,000 followers. Our focus is on advocating for more livable communities for residents throughout Sussex County. We're here to provide comment on the proposed perimeter buffer amendments. Since the development design launch, SPC formed a team to inform, to engage the public in the development design review process and the pathway to more livable communities. Team members have professional experience in municipal planning, landscape architecture, county, state careers in natural resources, including forestry. Smiles. Public recognizes the county's efforts 14 months ago to launch a review of the potential updates of the county code in reference to development design. The public interest in the workshop was overwhelming. Overflow, two separate meeting rooms in the process. People turned away. Most viewed this as the most significant effort on behalf of the county in decades in terms of the review with a pathway to potential changes. Testimony centered on particular outdated and inconsistent land use codes, open to interpretation, and what appeared to be deficient county enforcement. In fact, much of the illustration showed, at minimum, loose interpretation to full range violations. There was genuine dialogue regarding potential corrections and fixes, but there was a lack of any discussion on how the improved standards would contribute to an overall vision for a more balanced, orderly approach to future residential development. In the most recent, one of the more recent Cape Gazettes, there was a cartoon. And the question was asked, which image best describes proposed buffer regs? A good step in the right direction, low-hanging fruit, too little, too late. My opinion, it is a combination of the first two. A good first step. Focusing on perimeter buffers will address low-hanging fruit. And I don't think it's ever too little, too late, if we can work together in the process. Now, understanding there were no objections to possibly citing an historical fact earlier with Mr. Hutt and Mr. Robertson, I do want to make a couple comments with regards to what led us to where we're today. The commission and the council were asked independently to review a summary of idea table to identify their priorities. Public was not informed of the process, although it appears that it might have been the low-hanging fruit approach. Too many approaching it on a one-off basis could be short-sighted because each category is independent of one another, or interdependent upon one another. And what I mean by that is, the category of site work determines where the building site is. What remains is a minimum percentage of both passive and active open space. Tree preservation is contained in the open space, including perimeter buffers. Essentially, perimeter buffers is a subset of tree preservation. subdivision standards, including superior design, define the regulations and potential disincentives and incentives. A piecemeal approach likely runs the risk of amending the amended from each separate category review and the potential waste of county staff time and resources. However, this is where we're at. One of the key takeaways is that similar to neighboring jurisdictions, the county would be best served by adopting the concept of requiring a conservation plan that accompanies the site plan that addresses the categories in more holistic fashion. Every single bordering jurisdiction references a conservation plan that accompanies a site plan that deals with open space, tree preservation, and natural resources. If I can ask the commission permission to keep the record open so that I, for your convenience, can provide you with the purpose statement that speaks to the conservation plan for each of the neighboring jurisdictions. It is one paragraph for each to include Conservation Act of Maryland, the Kent County Woodland Preservation Ordinance, as well as Newcastle. So I'd ask that the record be kept open. I'll immediately send that this evening. Your approach you will hear repeated throughout the document that we are submitting for the record is comprised of 14 comments, combination of comments, as well as additions, modifications to the existing proposed amendment. I have that document here, if I can approach. Right, this is something that's separate. We will not be commenting this evening on all of the comments and recommendations. SPC development team member Steve Sinclair will be highlighting just a handful of those comments. And so at this point, what I'd like to do is turn it over to Steve Sinclair. Steve, again, is a SPC Design Development Committee member. And with that, if I can ask Steve to approach.
Okay. So I'll ask, go ahead and start the clock over again for 10 minutes.
Thank you, Rich, and thank you, Council Member. My name is Steve Sinclair. My wife, Susan, and I live on 30726 Beach Club Court in Millsboro, Delaware. We moved down here, and we just love the mix of ag land, woodland, forest fields, and farms. It feels like home, even for an old Vermonter. I retired after a 42-year career with the Vermont Department of Forests and Parks. The last 16 years, I was the director of forests. And just as an aside, my wife was the executive director of the Central Vermont Regional Planning Commission. So we come from a planning natural resource background. I want to commend the Sussex Planning and Zoning and County Council for the work that you've done so far on tackling these issues. It's really a step in the right direction, and I think it will have a lasting impact on the quality of life of all the residents of Sussex County. But this is also an opportunity for bold leadership on your part. You've opened the door, now the time is to seize it and really look at the natural resources of Sussex County and start trying to plan for their conservation and use. As Rich said, we're not going to go through all of our comments, but I want to highlight on a few of the proposals that we're looking at in changing the ordinance. Their first one is line 29, and what we're suggesting is that we really need to add a whereas. If you think of the existing perimeter buffer standards, the existing code, we were really talking about just planted trees. But you've opened the door now to preserve existing woodlands. And those existing woodlands have a myriad of values and benefits, much beyond screening. And this is an opportunity for you to articulate that in the ordinance, talking about flood mitigation, soil erosion, improving air and water quality, wildlife habitat, recreational opportunities. That really needs to go in the ordinance. You need to identify what those values and benefits are. And if you think back of chapter 115, resource buffers, you've done that. You've articulated what those benefits and values of those resource buffers are. That should be in this ordinance as well. Line 38, recognizing in the proposed code that you're going to be looking at all these benefits and values. And as Rich mentioned, we really think it's time to require a conservation plan. In the resource buffer ordinance, you talk about a natural resource plan. In your county overall plan, you talk about protecting natural resources. How can you do that if you don't know what they are and you haven't come up with an idea how to manage those over time? So you talk about a perimeter buffer landscape plan. Why not broaden that to be a conservation plan? So when the developer is doing his development design and his site plan, accompanying that comes a conservation plan. You've opened the door because now you're requiring a forest assessment. But just counting the trees is not enough, because we know there's more values than just the trees themselves. There's habitat, there's soil erosion, there's other things going on in that woodland that need to be recognized, evaluated, and strategies come put in place to maintain those over time. Brian mentioned about a woodland. You just can't leave it alone. It needs to be managed over time. These perimeter buffers that are going to be retained are going to be managed, need to be managed over time. You're going to have disease, dying trees, hazard trees that are going to need to be removed. You're going to have invasive species coming in that's going to need to be managed over time. So why not require a conservation plan in place that would articulate all those values and benefits? So line 157, we need to expand that forest assessment to not just look at the trees, but all the natural resources within that area. This is going to be so valuable when you start looking at open space. We start thinking about where on this parcel should be setting aside open space. Knowing what is there is the only way to do that. Let's see. Line 218, state forester for Delaware Forest Service, I think went on the record, or at least spoke at the Sussex Preservation Coalition, with us, what would be an adequate buffer width? And he said 100 feet. In my experience, a minimum buffer width, in order for the trees to maintain their over time from windthrow, sun scald, and to provide some of these natural resource benefits beyond just screening, need to be at least the width of the average height of the trees. So 100 feet, yeah, that's quite a bit. You know, we recognize that's going to have an impact on the development, the width of the trees. We're recommending 50 feet as a minimum requirement to at least start to maintain some of those values, wildlife habitats, soil erosion, flood mitigation. So expanding that from 30 to 50 feet, we think is the right idea. Line 239. Expand the perimeter buffer protection area to be applied to resource buffers. So in Chapter 115, you have resource buffers, but you don't require the perimeter buffer protection area on resource buffers. If we think they're important for perimeter buffers, they're equally more important for resource buffers when you're talking about water quality issues as well. So we're recommending that you need to go back to the resource buffer code to include that as well. Line 307, changing, first thing I want to mention is the fact that I also serve on the Delaware Urban and Community Forestry Council, which is a advisory group to the Delaware Forest Service. There is a list of recommended tree species, recommended trees put out by the Delaware Forest Service. I request that you keep the record open so that I can submit that for your use.
That would be great, because they said there wasn't a good list when we reached out to them. So
we're recommending that the mix of tree species go 60% deciduous and 40% evergreen. The reason for that is when you think about it, an evergreen tree tends to retain their branches lower. It's more dense. It's going to provide much more screening. Additionally, the canopy size of a conifer tree is less than a deciduous tree. When you're requiring 15 trees for 100 feet, you're going to have canopy overlap. We think a mix of 60-40 would work out better. Line 363, applying no disturbance language to the perimeter buffer protection area. I apologize for pointing it out, but it's our reading of the proposed ordinance that nothing can take place in that protection area. No tree cutting can take place in the perimeter buffer protection area. But there is language that in the perimeter buffer, you can't do any grubbing, hoeing, or removal of soil. We think that that language should also be included in the perimeter buffer protection area as well. And finally, line 373, and this goes to Mr. Butler's comment as well, relating to mitigation. So the developer comes in, they remove woodland, they have to expand the size of the perimeter buffer. We're also suggesting that additional acreage that they plant, it needs to be at a higher density of number of trees per acre, equal to the existing basal area that's present of trees. Any forester would be able to explain that to you, but I'm running out of time. Finally, Rich started off with a cartoon. I'm going to end one, and that is we're asking a lot of these buffers, but they can provide a lot of benefits. I think if you look at amending this ordinance to expand upon that, we're going to be able to have buffers that provide more than just screening. Thank you very much for your time.
Rich, we thank you.
That was fabulous. Thank you.
And I would also add, it's really helpful to have, and I know that, you know, folks have started doing this, you know, just line by line suggestions rather than sort of broad based comments, you know, because broad comments are obviously helpful, but this, you know, then you can take a look at, you know, specific language and whether it makes sense or not. I think it's just a lot easier for the commission and staff.
Well, maybe if we leave the record open, we could provide the opportunity for them to condense it into line by line.
Well, they've done it in here, so, yeah, we're good with this. That's what I was saying. Having this was really helpful.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, that was my point.
I'm fine with leaving the record open to receive additional information with both Brasso mentioned as well. So nothing wrong with any of that.
No.
That's fine.
No, I can't wait to read that paragraph.
Okay, who's next? All right, we'll go right here, and then, ma'am, you'll be next, okay?
How do I advance this?
What's that?
Do I advance this?
Button
on
the
right on this? All right, well, he's got to get it up there first.
You're looking at me like I know how to do the technology. That's the wrong person.
You're asking the wrong bunch.
I'm just going to put that right out there.
Good afternoon. My name is Jill Hicks. I am Vice President of the Sussex Preservation Coalition. I live in Chapel Green, Lewis. First and foremost, thank you for your work on perimeter buffers and the other county initiatives. This effort will go a long way to providing the quality of life residents hope to enjoy. This work will move Sussex County closer to creating livable communities. I want to make clear that my comments are not repetitive and certainly not in conflict with Rich and Steve's presentation. I agree with and endorse everything they presented. My comments are in concert with theirs, providing real-life observations gathered from around the county and pertinent to this ordinance, and can improve residents' quality of life now and into the future. And as always, I do have copies of my statement for each of you that I will distribute afterwards, and do have line item additions for you. First, I applaud the inclusion of perimeter buffer protection area. This will help protect the trees that remain in the buffer for the betterment of everyone on both sides of these buffers. Oh, look at that. I had an arborist come from Complete Tree, come inspect the trees on our property because one was looking sickly. He said it is fine, but we should keep an eye on the trees closest to the property line for several reasons. New exposure to north winds and the danger of wind throw, damage to the root system during the clearing, and soil compaction during construction. He said sometimes it can take 6 years or more for a tree to succumb to that kind of trauma. This tree fell behind our neighbor's house in heavy winds at the end of February this year, shortly after the perimeter drain was installed. The perimeter buffer protection area is needed and appreciated. I ask that you recommend strengthening this ordinance protection by clearly stating that no disturbance of soils or clearing of trees can take place. So for page 11, lines 362, 363, which we've already talked about, we should add that at no time shall the ground within the woodlands area, the perimeter buffer, and the perimeter buffer protection area be clear, graded, regraded, or grubbed. To further demonstrate, the left side shows the buffer between our fence and the silt fence. The initial clearing took place in January of 2023. On the right side, it's now the second time the root systems are being disturbed and cut. This was March of this year. I am standing at my fence, and you can see how they excavated right up against the perimeter line. A perimeter buffer protection area would have been beneficial here to keep that disturbance and root damage back. That tree that I showed you earlier fell shortly after this work. To further justify extension of the perimeter buffer, I'm going to go on because you already saw this one, protection area, the clearing of entire woodlands destroys natural habitats that are necessary for everyone's health, safety, and welfare. If we continue clearing large wooded areas that are habitats to native insects, amphibians, fish, and animals, we will destroy the balance of nature that sustains us all. By tearing down woodlands, we created dislocated forest fragments that deprive all native species access to food, water, and interactions they need to thrive, not to mention the clean air, clean water, and biodiversity that we depend on. No one thrives in a sterile environment created by lawns, macadam, and rooftops. Replacing forest with lawns and macadam creates dead zones. With the extension of the perimeter buffers and the perimeter buffer protection area, we have a better chance of providing the wildlife corridors needed for everyone and everything to thrive. Audubon International states that many species of birds, even when migrating, will fly out of their way to follow wooded corridors rather than fly straight across open fields. Protecting the perimeter buffers is a move in the right direction for every reason. These pictures were taken from inside my home. These geese and goslings and fox were just on the other side of that silt fence, not at the same time. Next, we need to protect our personal migrating patterns and the positive impact wooded buffers have along our roadways. Vinyl stockade fences and berms do not provide screening, nor do they add value to the county's quality of life, nor do they create livable communities for area residents. These homes in Lewis Crossing were built and occupied prior to Redner's and the Redner's gas station. Here's what these residents are living with now. They asked me to drive back here at night. So this is during the day, that's night. That's from the in between two houses. These lights are blinding at night. This is a perfect example of harmful light pollution. It not only interferes with migrating birds, it is not healthy living, wait a minute, it is not healthy living conditions for humans. A stockade fence will never block this light, but trees will. Some of these homes have taken to filling their backyards with newly planted conifers, but not everyone can afford that or can afford to give up their backyards, nor should they have to. When looking at a site plan on a piece of paper, it is difficult to fathom all the positives and negatives that will come with it. That's why we need ordinances and codes that will protect citizens from this type of pollution. Firms will not and do not provide adequate screening and add no value either. Studies show that forested roadways have a calming effect. This is John J. Williams Highway traveling southwest beyond the fire station. Then along came Beach Plum Preserve. This was all woods along John J. Williams Highway, all the way down to Angola Road. Now it's lined with continuous row of vinyl stockade fences, and not a single tree was replaced. This is Red Mill Pond, all stockade fence, no trees. This is Kendleton, houses built right up against the stockade fence, which is right up against Cedar Grove Road. How many of those trees do we honestly believe will reach full maturity up against a fence like that? A wooded perimeter buffer would have could have and should have remained here. The county needs to look ahead and decide what it wants to look like and be for its residents and visitors. I am not suggesting that we ban stockade fences. What I am advocating is that we not allow forests to be cut down and then replaced with stockade fences. Stockade fences can be installed within the property line or on the line, but not to the exclusion of the required forested perimeter buffer and the perimeter buffer protection area. Page 14, beginning at line 462, needs to read, quote, may include landscape and design features such as fences, walls, berms, landscape plantings, so forth and so on. I think that's a legal term. But never to the exclusion of forested or planted perimeter buffer and its perimeter buffer protection area. Earlier in this draft ordinance, it states that the perimeter buffer is to go around the entire property. The county should adhere to that, including along adjacent roadways. This slide was taken from inside my home. The project manager for this development said that we will not see them building back here for another 6 to 8 years, depending on the market. Therefore, I live with this abandoned destruction for 6 to 8 years or more. Then at some point, construction will begin. We now have the ability to correct these unsuitable living conditions for others. We need to strengthen page 14, beginning with line 475. Quote, clearing of trees in an area should not be permitted in a phase until the developer has received permits for that particular phase. A current resident should not have to live with a clear-cut area and construction debris and the lack of a buffer year after year before the clearing of that entire forest. I rarely heard traffic on Robinsonville Road nearly a mile away as a crow flies. Now, all day long, I hear the backing up of heavy construction equipment. That woods would have blocked that noise pollution as it always had. I know the Planning and Zoning Commission and Planning and Zoning staff takes a lot of criticism, and it's my observation that most people are not familiar with the process or that Planning and Zoning doesn't write the codes, but is charged with following them. Now you have the opportunity to have a say in what codes you are charged to follow in your decision-making. The county is off to a good start. However, no one knows what enrages county citizens better than you. This is your time to make recommendations to council for the betterment of the county. Again, thank you for taking up this work. There is a lot of good in this ordinance, and I think we're off to a good start. Let's bring balance to the county. Thank you.
Okay, awesome. Thank you very much. Right on time. Yes, ma'am.
Good evening. I will try to keep this quick. My name is Katie Gillis. I'm the executive officer of the Home Builders Association of Delaware. We are an association representing 375 members that are builders, remodelers, and developers statewide. I'd like to thank you for keeping the record open. I was going to request to do the same thing. We will submit a detailed letter with some technical comments that are better addressed through writing than through dense technical commentary this evening. As a precursor, we support efforts to protect existing trees. We believe that buffers are important, and so is the preservation of existing buffers. I would also like to reiterate the request that was made previously for a working group to look at this issue and others from a holistic perspective involving stakeholders with disparate and diverse backgrounds, viewpoints, and perspectives. The request for a working group was supported by our association and by the American Council of Engineering Companies, Associated Builders and Contractors of Delaware, Committee of 100, Delaware State Chamber of Commerce, Kent Sussex Leadership Alliance, Property Business Alliance, CDEC, and the Rehoboth Beach, Dewey Beach Chamber of Commerce. We truly believe that the best way to create meaningful change is through consensus and compromise for all parties involved. A solution developed by a working group would be more likely to garner widespread support and receive less opposition and would better reflect the competing interests of the stakeholders in this process.
I want to say one thing, you know, on that, because we often get asked to have working groups. That's why we have the public hearings. You know, if that litany of folks want to participate, this is the opportunity to do it. You know, we have one more hearing at County Council as well, and certainly the record will be held open for anybody to participate by submitting written comments. Whether the commission holds the record open or not, it's still open to County Council. But we get asked frequently to do, and I'm not directing this at you, because it's a broader conversation, you know, to have working groups on ordinances every time we do an ordinance that's of consequence. But the fact of the matter is we've had workshops on this. We've had multiple discussions at County Council. You know, there's public comment where we hear a lot of comment at County Council. We've drafted the ordinance, and we have this hearing with the record being open along with County Council. So I hear the request, but I would just suggest that anybody that has an interest in it participate in the public hearing process and not anticipate that there'll be a workshop.
Sure, and we certainly appreciate the opportunity to be part of the public hearing. I think that where we're coming from, those that we would appreciate a more collaborative approach, but if any way we can get our comments heard, we appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Okay, can I keep going? To clear up a common misconception, developers do not clear trees just for fun or without consideration for environmental consequences. In fact, developers hate clearing trees and buffer areas as they have to spend money to cut down the trees, spend money to grade the area, spend money to replant the buffer, and then sell the lots for less as they no longer back up to mature trees. Our main concern is that there are no carve-outs for tree removal in existing buffers when required by state or county regulations or when required for utilities. Certain scenarios exist where county and state regulations and topography would necessitate grading in buffer areas and associated removal of trees. Developers should not be penalized for removing trees in buffers when the law requires them to do so or when it is done for the purpose of utilities or future connectivity. As written, if a developer is required to remove trees in a buffer to comply with stormwater regulations or to deliver utilities to a site, they would need to comply with the mitigation requirements of the bill as well as fines. It's simply unfair to punish developers when their hand is forced by the law or utility companies. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will submit a letter. Thank you.
Sounds like the engineers need to be represented here too, because it starts with them for the design.
Well, they received the same notice that these people did. If they're not here, they're not here.
You didn't have any questions. I could bring a backup.
Well, it's all good. No, I just expanding on what Mr. Robertson was saying. You know, I've been doing this for a while, and some of our best ordinance work has come from workshops. That approach does work, and so on.
But, you know, in this instance, it always amazes me that, especially when we're going through the land use process, we have meeting after meeting, all those meetings are advertised, and then when the ordinance comes down or the plans come down, everybody is so upset because I didn't know about it. Well, you know, if you didn't know about it, you just weren't listening, because we, you know, we have meeting after meeting, and that's what these public hearings are for. I mean, these folks over here, apparently, all of you, apparently knew that that we were doing this. So I don't think, you know, we're certainly not doing it in the back room. This is a public forum, and the engineers, builders, whoever, are welcome to be here to express their point of view. But we're certainly going to afford those of you who are here an opportunity to express your thoughts, and we're going to let you do that right now, ma'am. If you would just give us your
Hello,
name.
I will. Commissioners, planners, and Mr. Robertson and Mr. Whitehouse. My name is Susan Anderhagen. I live in Lewis in Tidewater Landing. Between December, and I think I'll be pretty brief, between December 2022 and today, I've exchanged over 30 emails with Mr. Whitehouse, P&Z, and Mark Schaefer with perimeter buffer issues that are still not addressed in the current proposed amendment. And I do want to thank you for doing the proposed amendment. It does go a long way, but there's still some things missing. I'm going to mention those. And I think maybe I'm the reason Mr. Whitehouse is leaving. I've sent him so many emails.
I'll have a piece of good news for you. Okay, that's no longer the case. Mr. Whitehouse will be remaining with the county.
Okay. That's great. So the emails
that's,
illustrate
that's the
an
issue. That's news I've heard this year.
That's great. Yeah. So the emails that I have sent back and forth illustrate an issue with the buffer requirements for Chase Oaks adjacent to Tidewater Landing. Both of these developments are on Robinsonville Road, but our experience is illustrative of something that can happen with any buffers going forward, and that's what I want to show you. So first I'm going to say my ask, and then I will show you why this ask is important. So first, to add a no later than date to perimeter buffers regardless of the phasing. Chase Oaks cleared the natural buffer between them and Tidewater Landing in November 2021, yet they have not yet requested a building permit for the phase closest to Tidewater Landing, and so there is currently no timeline for replacing that buffer because they are not yet in the phase, and I will show you that. And the second one is to modify the proposal to start the clock on perimeter buffers, not when the first building permit is issued, but instead the earliest of when the road construction begins or the first building permit is issued. Our experience at Tidewater Landing is that the developer removed the natural buffers and then did all the road construction adjacent to us. That has as much negative effect to neighbors, resale value, right of enjoyment, as home construction, as it has noisy, loud machinery and huge material piles for month. Now, we talk about phasing, and in the new proposal, you talk about wanting to do it by phase, but to my knowledge, that's not in the current ordinance. The current development plan said putting in the buffer within 18 months of subdivision approval. It said nothing about phases. But when I spoke to Mr. Whitehouse early on, he told me that the practice was by phases, but there are problems with that. So let me first show you what this is. So if you look to the left, Tidewater Landing is over where I have that thing. In the green is where Chase Oaks cleared their buffer. Everything down on the right-hand side, the dark blue, the pink, is their phase 1 through 4. They're actively working in those. But Chase Oaks Phase 5, they do have a building permit issued for that, but they have not requested to start with Phase 6, yet they have put in all of the roads up there, starting in November 2021. So I'll show you, and I'm sorry, this was an aerial view, so the position isn't the same, but that's Robinsonville Road cutting across both Tidewater Landing is the circle on the left. That's Chase Oaks. All of that work started in November 2021 and early 2022, yet no building permit has been issued for Phase 6, and they have not requested that yet, so there's no timeline for the buffer replacement. And this is just an example from one of my neighbor's homes. This was starting in November 2021. This is from somebody's porch. This is what they have had to look at, starting in November 2021. And because that is considered Phase 6, they have not yet had a building permit requested, and so the timeline for that buffer has not yet started, so there has to be a no later than date, because literally the person whose porch that is said to me, am I going to be alive when this buffer is put in? This definitely affects resale values. So as I said, the other thing is that in March 20th, 2024, there was a council meeting where this was introduced, I believe, by Mr. Robertson, and Mark Schaefer asked if the new ordinance helps the Tidewater Landing. And Mr. Whitehouse said it does, but it really does not. It's true that with the new ordinance in place, perhaps Chase Oaks may not have been able to remove the pre-existing wooded buffer because it was a large wooded buffer of loblollies, not extremely beautiful trees, but it was totally covered in loblollies. They may not be able to get a permit to build a house in their phase six, but the real issue again has been they have not even gotten to phase six. And so we could be sitting here as far, you know, they could go out of business tomorrow. As a matter of fact, they've added another builder in there. It was DRB and now they've added Beazer Homes. So Beazer's now building in phase five. But you know, I mean, developers go out of business. They could never get to phase six, and with the current and even with the proposed regulation, they would not have to replace that buffer. So I'm asking for, I'm actually not gonna go through this, but if you're wanting numbered and phase by phase, it should be in the timing section where you had the timing of the buffers, and there really needs to be something that says something to the effect of the perimeter buffer landscape plan must include a no later than date for the entire perimeter buffer, regardless of phasing. The state should not be longer than 24 months from the issuance of the first building permit in any phase, or something to your liking, but there has to be a no later than date. And then I think no portion of a perimeter buffer should be able to be designated on the development plan to be in a different phase than the homes in the phase adjacent to it. So if I go back to this plan, perhaps this never should have been approved, because you can kind of see that there is all kinds of homes in phase five and the pond that are closest to Tidewater Landing, yet they put another phase kind of wrapping around it. And so again, I don't know whether the developer's playing games or not, but you know, that's what we've been up against. And so I thank you, and I'll be happy to send you that kind of line by line statement after the fact. So okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay, who's next? Everyone's had their opportunity.
Mr. Hutt
in the back here. Okay, Mr. Hutt, you've got two minutes and 57 seconds.
I'll just hand in my line changes then. Perfect.
Great.
That might be the best news you've heard all week.
Mr. Whitehouse trumps all that.
I agree wholeheartedly with that.
Mr. Whitehouse has trumped all that.
I was delighted to hear that.
Yeah.
As that's being handed down, for the record, David Hutt, local attorney with Morris James here in Georgetown. This is the same format as I submitted with respect to the accessory dwelling ordinance. And I'm going to go through these quickly. The first one is, it says new lines. There's a reference to a forest assessment, but it would seem to me that what's really being required is a report. And so just like there are new definitions regarding the perimeter buffer and the plan, it seems to me that there should be a forest assessment report that's required as part of that. So that was just in addition to that. And then, I'll skip a little bit, if you go down to the one at the very bottom of page one, you can actually simplify that requirement in subsection B1 and just reference that forest assessment report instead of stating the qualifications of what that report would be. And that's largely just code drafting, a little bit of a change, but I think it says the same thing ultimately. Moving back up to lines 228 to 235, in the definition of a perimeter buffer landscape plan. I think there's a bit of a misnomer. It says that there's a plan prepared by a developer, and as you'll see, I suggested it be a plan submitted by a developer, because the very next sentence says it has to be prepared by and lists the qualifications of the person who actually needs to be the preparer and certifier of the results of that plan. Again, just a little bit of verbiage. The next item is in the definition of woodlands, and in that one, I thought it was important, and frankly, given the discussion earlier about local versus native, which I think Mr. Wheatley was correct about, that's a good distinguish. Everybody always wants to distinguish between local people, native people, and then everybody else. And so this could be local and native trees, but as the commission may recall from even the Gray Rock Preserve public hearing that was conducted, all forests and all trees are not created equal. And if it happens to just be scrub that developed along the edge of a farm field, even if it meets that 6 inches of diameter at breast height, that doesn't mean that it's worthy of preservation or should be preserved. The addition of native, and it could be local or native, of course, as was suggested earlier, would be, in my mind, an important addition to the definition of woodlands in that section. I already covered the one at the bottom. Again, that's really relates to the insertion of the definition of forest assessment report. Moving to lines 348 to 352, that again is the insertion of the word native. Again, could be local and native. And that I think is also consistent with the balance of that section that talks about invasive species. But I would say that a tree may not be local or native, and it may also not be invasive. So this would cover a broader range of categories in that. Lines 376 to 378, that relates to when a property has been cleared within 5 years, or a portion of a property has been cleared within 5 years of the development project. And what I added there was to clarify that it could be a separate off-property site. That's stated in other sections, but wasn't as clear to me in that section as it may otherwise have been. Listening to the discussion this afternoon, it appeared to me that the goal of that is to conserve a forest. And in looking at lines 373 to 381, all the references in those code provisions are to new woodlands. So you'll see the term new woodlands referenced throughout. And I would suggest, this is not in the piece of paper that's in front of you, but I would suggest that perhaps in addition to a developer having to create or an alternative to a developer having to create a new woodlands, they could purchase an existing woodlands in that same geological code that's there at 2 times the replacement acreage and place that conservation easement on it so that it doesn't require that a person plant a new forest, but the county still gets the benefit of a preservation of perhaps an existing forest, which may be even more valuable.
I think that's better.
Really. As it correct, the forest already exists. You're not waiting for it to grow. That is not in here, but given the discussion that I've heard this afternoon, it was a note that I wrote to myself sitting back there. In the next section, subsection C5, 422 to 423, it talks about access points to the woodlands, and several of these, there seems to me to be a difference between the defined term woodlands and the defined term perimeter buffer, and I felt like sometimes those things were switched back and forth. Where perimeter buffer was mentioned, woodlands should be there, vice versa. Where woodlands is mentioned, it should say perimeter buffer. A next item was, in my mind, it was open-ended. It says that the developer guarantees the full cost of replacement for any trees, shrubs, or existing woodlands. Again, I think that is intended to be the perimeter buffer, but I also think there has to be an end time to that. It can't be that the developer is the guarantor of those things in perpetuity. And so I tied that to another provision that referenced section 9931, which is substantial completion under the code. With respect to lines 507 to 512, there was and this goes to Mr. Wheatley's comments about a homeowners association. What I am proposing is to delete The reference to the date that maintenance responsibilities are transferred to a homeowners association and fix it on 9931, which is a time period that the county is familiar with checking, has access to when something achieves substantial completion. There's a defined process for that versus the homeowners association transfer. And even with that, if the transfer to a homeowners association is going to be the key, I would argue that the responsibility for the homeowners association is day one. You record a restrictive covenant that says the homeowners association is responsible for those things. At the beginning, the homeowners association is, of course, dominated by the developer. But I don't think that as it's written there, that's all that meaningful, because it's always the homeowners association responsibility to maintain any amenity, whether it's a pool, clubhouse, a perimeter buffer, or a stormwater pond. And so saying when that responsibility is transferred, I would tell you it's transferred when that homeowners association is formed and the land is subjected to those restrictive covenants, that's when that occurs. And I don't think that was the intent of this, which again is why I thought it, just tying it back to the date of substantial completion when the staff and others go through their checklist and make sure that substantial completion has occurred. In lines 541 to 543, again, I think that there should have been a reference there to the perimeter buffer to include all the various components of what's set forth in the proposed amendment to the code. With respect to the subsection G2, the third page, which is subsection G2, and again, this deals with replacement when there's been damage within a perimeter buffer. In subsection G, subsection D, and then or two rather, and then B, it talks about new woodlands being created, and the perimeter buffer doesn't have to have any woodlands in it, and so create the creation of new woodlands. That's why I just, and again, I don't have exact language for that. I'm just, you can see the bracketed items that just point out there seems to be a little inconsistency or vagueness there that could be clarified, because there may not be woodlands there. And in addition, the replacement rate of 3 replacement trees planted for every tree removed or damaged, that was of some concern, because if somebody, and there was a reference earlier to someone, you know, who at a public hearing said that they took down some things in the buffer so they would have a better view out their backyard. If someone did that and took down just one tree, it may be that it's unhealthy to put 3 trees in the place of 1 tree. We have people here who could probably speak better to that. But 3 trees to 1 tree as just a bare requirement in a defined area, because those trees have to go in the area where the damage occurred or on that property, may not be the right outcome or result for that mitigation process. So those are my comments. You have them. Happy to answer any questions. And again, there was one comment that was not on the sheet, because it was just developed through the discussion here this afternoon.
And I made note of that, too.
So you got 30 seconds left.
Good stuff.
Good.
Yep, right, that is good. All I have.
All good stuff. Thank you. Thank you to all of you, by the way. Is there anyone else who wishes to speak? Apparently not. So thank you all for coming. I do miss one thing, because Ms. Inderhagen kind of alluded to it. One of the things that is a challenge for the Planning and Zoning Office is this fire hose of public inquiry that we have all the time. You know, I'm sure it was not just your 30 emails, but there are 300 of you doing this, okay? So I would expect that you, going forward, you might see that, and this was all done, is all done in the name of transparency. You know, the last thing we want to be perceived of as doing, because I can assure you I've been here for 30 years, it does not happen that way. It's never happened that way, but we're often accused of making deals and doing things behind closed doors and all that. So in an effort to make sure that we were as transparent as possible, what we have done is we have kind of created a situation where the staff can't get this kind of work done because they're having to field a call from someone who is upset about a tree that fell down in their backyard, okay?
So this is one of the, this is where the.
Not to suggest that that's her situation.
No, no, no. I'm not saying that. That's
that is the kind of call.
You're good.
But
you're
that's
good.
That's
taking it very well.
That's the, my point is, that's the kind of calls that the management people get, okay? The people who are supposed to be doing these things we're talking about right now. So, but so what happens is the urgent overtakes the important, okay? So we're going to be taking some steps to try to correct that. And this also speaks to the importance of the advocacy groups. If you want to have an impact, that's the place to do it, because you know, we understand that when Rich Barrasso gets up to speak, that he's representing several hundred people, maybe 5,000, I think he said, you know, when he's talking about that. So that's, you know, that's important. We get that. We get that. And that's where those groups can really be, you know, of some value in, you know, in that regard. So, I'm, you know, again, thank you all for coming. Your comments absolutely are going to be considered. I'm sure that we will hold the record open for 10 days or whatever we normally do, usually 10 days to receive written comments, okay? So if you have anything else you want to submit, certainly can get it into the record. And, you know, this is, I won't say it's the beginning of the process, but it's still early enough to make a difference, okay? It's not too late to make changes. That's why we're having a public hearing. Okay, and County Council is going to have one too. So if
is there a council hearing date scheduled yet?
Yeah. I was going to just ask if we could let people know when that's going to be.
What is it? While you're looking that up, I did want to just say one more thing about the engineer comment that I made, because it starts with them, and I'm sorry that there is lack of their presence here, because they design it. That's what gets submitted to Soil Conservation District. That's what's approved, or they come back with changes or whatever, but that's where it all starts. So I'm sorry that they're not more actively involved in this process with what we're doing.
I have
maybe they are behind the scenes, and I don't know, and I'll give them the benefit of the doubt.
To confirm, Mr. Chairman, it's June 11th is the County Council day at 1:30.
Say again?
June 11th.
June 11th at 1:30.
June 11th, everyone. That's when the County Council.
Yeah, and we have a meeting at the end of May, and then is there still one before that in June? Yeah, I mean, I know there's one before Memorial Day, but is there still one in June?
June 5th.
June 5th? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Plenty of time.
All right. Then with all that, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us the rest of the evening to see if we make a decision.
We're leaving
not likely.
Record open,
we're referring back.
Oh, I'm so sorry.